First things first, it is good to be back with you. It is good to be back with both of you after a week away. I'm still Jenna Wolf. He is still the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter, and this is Nick Wright.
All good, baby.
We have been away, and we have missed you, but we are still caught up on everything that happened.
Yeah, don't adjust your TV. It's not your color. We're all looking a little more chocolate. Jenna, beautiful with the tan.
He could say that.
Nick Wright bringing in the middle, and of course me. You know, I got a built-in tan, but it's enhanced.
Oh, we've got a fun 3 hours ahead for you, but we're happy to be back together. Mm-hmm. Let us start with LeBron James.
That
is where we left off. That is where we will pick up. So the Lakers lost to the Pelicans over the weekend, a Pelicans team without Anthony Davis. The loss dropped the Lakers a game below 500. They're now 3 games out of the playoff picture. Not a great spot to be in with only 23 games left to play. As a result, LeBron had some harsh words for his teammates after the game. Take a listen.
You've never been there or know what it takes to actually, you know, shoot for something like that. Sometimes you're afraid to get uncomfortable. You know, so you got to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. So I'm not saying that's what we are as a whole. Kind of looks that way at times that, you know, sometimes we feel like we're afraid to be uncomfortable, kind of get out of our comfort zone, you know, kind of, you know, have that sense of urgency, you know, from the jump, not be afraid to actually go out and fail to succeed. So, I mean, we have, 23 games left. It's just been so, like, in the last few years, you know, everybody's so accustomed to the losses that I'm just not accustomed to. I would never get comfortable with losing. So, you know, losing game one to Houston, it feels the same way as losing game 59 in New Orleans for me. That's just how I'm built. That's who I am.
LeBron is so locked in, keyed in. At all times, he knows exactly how many games are left on the schedule. You wonder if you polled everyone on the team, they knew that there were 23 games left to go for this Lakers team. See, what'd you make of what LeBron had to say?
LeBron's frustrated. It's been a frustrating season. It was going to be tough in the transition, but he didn't think it was going to be this tough because the one thing that he's been able to depend on, that's his availability. Last year with the Cavs, 82 games he played when they desperately needed, because they went through a couple situations like the Lakers are going through. But we knew that LeBron, he had the Eastern Conference. So we weren't worried. Well, Nick wasn't worried. You and I were worried all year. Nick, you worried? No, not yet.
Worried.
But he had the Eastern Conference. Now being in the West and with players that haven't seen it. So I appreciate what LeBron's saying, but if I was him, I'd be very, very careful because if I take what he's saying and say that these young players, they've never been there and they're comfortable with losing, why would I keep acknowledging that? So I believe that LeBron, if he's not careful, these young players, because they're looking to LeBron for leadership, how did that help them? It might be the truth. Being a leader is very, very tough. And I thought what LeBron said, it was the truth, but it didn't help these young players. And that's what this is really about. These young players and the players they brought in this offseason, them gelling and trying to play good basketball. If LeBron hadn't missed those 18 games, we wouldn't be having this conversation because they would probably be in the fourth, fifth spot in the Western Conference. But now you're starting to pick apart, man, is Luke Walton really a good enough coach? What about these young players? They're used to losing.
What about these offseason acquisitions?
Yes.
None of which seem to be working out. They
were fit to make us a great defensive team and to be able to play with LeBron James. Neither one of those things are true right now.
So here's what I think is the most interesting about what you said. It might be true, but why'd you say it? Because another thing LeBron said this weekend that he's caught a lot of criticism for is basketball the most important thing? And people are throwing in his face, how many TV projects you got going? Aren't you about to sit down with Maverick and do another shop episode with Anthony Davis and Antonio Brown? Now, LeBron has always been adamant about, as they put it, keeping the main thing, meaning keeping basketball as your number one no matter what.
But I'm sure that was a lot easier when you're in Cleveland.
Of course.
Compared to being in Los Angeles where guys, NBA players, NFL players, on his off day or in a morning or something, be like, hey, will you come to L.A. to be able to shoot something? Yes, there's more people available for those types of things.
And it's similar when he had the comments about social media. Young guys need to stay off social media. And LeBron is on social media as much as, maybe not scrolling as much as the young guys, but posting as much as just about anyone on the team. But there are coaching issues. There was the LeBron health issue, there, which, by the way, I think is still lingering in this regard. He's got to be 280, 285 pounds. This is the biggest LeBron's been in his career. He is moving.
Nick, I'm going to tell you, because I've been watching LeBron since he was a kid. And I thought when he went to the Heat, I knew he changed his body for a physical reason. So I said, maybe it's the color scheme. Then he went to the Lakers. I'm like, is it the purple? No. Is it the gold? Like,
he's at least 20 pounds heavier than before the injury. I'm certain of it.
Wow.
20 pounds?
Absolutely. Listen, LeBron throughout the season will fluctuate typically between 250 and 270 pounds. Tries to be a little bulkier towards the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, he's got to be above 280. And so there are also roster construction issues. But they can't deal with any of that. The health, there's nothing to be done about. The coach, they're not going to do anything about. And the roster construction. So what he needs to do right now is get with his teammates and say, guys, I can do what I can do offensively. I need you guys to carry us defensively. Because what happened against the Pelicans is 42 points in the first quarter. What happened against the Hawks was they hit, 11 threes in the first quarter. They are not coming out ready to play defensively. And LeBron's been criticized the last few years for his defense. This is the first time in his career right now he is a bad defensive player.
Yeah, he's a liability on the defensive end.
And so he needs, because even in the Hawks and Pelicans losses, which are the two losses which are why people are panicking with the Lakers, LeBron's given you 28, 11, and 16, 28, 27, 7, and 12. So offensively, he has done everything that you could ask him.
Sure.
But defensively, the team's been a disaster. And this team was built with the idea of we will sacrifice shooting because we're going to get defense and toughness from Rondo, from Beasley, from JaVale. And now you're getting none of the offense and you're not getting the defense. So he needs, in these last 23 games, for the young guys to buy in, which is why maybe these comments were, even if you understand the frustration, a little misplaced.
Then there's this idea of the plan that they had mapped out for themselves, that in some way, shape, or form, they would make the playoffs in some capacity this year, maybe not go all the way. Then they would bring someone in, and then it would all be part of it. Do you think them missing the playoffs will affect them getting another big free agent, another big acquisition at the end of the season?
It affects a number of things. If they do miss the playoffs, they will fire their coach. If they do miss the playoffs, LeBron James will no longer be the greatest basketball player in the world. That title will be transferred. And as free agents, Kawhi Leonard and others, you have to question, really, even with LeBron James, they're not a playoff team. Am I the guy to take them over the hump? And you see the optics of the younger players not developing. So why do I want to join their basketball program? So there's a number of things that come with not making the playoffs. LeBron, 8 straight finals, 13 straight playoffs. No, this is a big deal if you can get in the playoffs as a superstar player or you can't get in the playoffs.
And you can't just and we learned with the Hawks game and we learned with the Pelicans game, you can't look at the schedule and say, oh, they'll win that game.
Yeah.
Because in the last 5 games, 2 of the games that I would have thought they're going to lose, at Boston and home for Houston, they won those because Houston had James Harden that game. They won those games, and they're 2 easiest games. At Atlanta and at New Orleans with no Anthony Davis, they lost those games. But the only reason the Lakers season is still alive, the only reason they're not on a 7-game losing streak is that Celtics and Rockets win. It is noteworthy, in the Celtics game, they were down 18.
Yes.
In the Rockets game, they were down 19.
So you're saying the last 7 games, they're 2-7.
They're 2-5.
2-5.
2-5, right? And the 2 wins have taken monumental comebacks.
Wow.
Which speaks to the lack of urgency. You come out against Boston, you get punched in the mouth. You come out against Houston, you get punched in the mouth repeatedly and then have one of your best 15-minute stretches of the season to save that game. But you can't build on anything. After that Houston win, you were like, okay, you're going to play 2 against New Orleans. You figured Anthony Davis wasn't going to play one of them. Mm-hmm. And a game against Memphis. You can win 4 in a row. And, by the way, the Spurs are struggling. They can't win on the road right now. The Clippers are falling back the way we thought they might. And they haven't been able to take advantage of it. Still 3 games back of the playoffs. I told you, Jenna, after the Pacers loss, I think it was, they have 10 losses to play with. Mm-hmm. They now have 8 losses to play with. It's 15-8 minimum.
Right.
The rest of the way, that would be one of their best 23-game stretches
of the
year.
You know who you made happy this morning?
Who?
Coach Mangini.
Why?
That
And he went through the
looking
schedule.
Looking at that schedule. Oh, yeah. You can't count those.
Oh, no, you can't count them. Not this year. Not with this Lakers team.
No, look, what he said was true. They need to play with a sense of urgency. He just should have said it maybe to the players and not to everyone else.
And he can play with some urgency on the defensive end.
All right, got to take a break. Coming up, should Zion shut it down for the year? That's next on FS1. And you can always check us out on the Fox Sports Channel on Sirius XM. We will be right back.
Hey guys, it's Nick Wright, and I want to tell you about Indochino, a new way for men to upgrade their wardrobe without breaking the bank. Indochino was founded on the belief that you don't need to spend a fortune on a custom wardrobe by taking the premium, made-to-measure experience direct to the consumer. They've created a superior alternative to off-the-rack clothing at ready-to-wear prices. Indochino allows customers to step into the shoes of a designer to create custom suits, shirts, chinos, blazers, and overcoats. They select from hundreds of fabrics and endless options, including lapels, pockets, buttons, linings, and monograms. Indochino couldn't make it any easier to start looking good. Just follow these easy steps. Visit a stylist at our showroom and have them take your measurements personally or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations, submit your measurements with your choices, and then relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in the next couple of weeks. My listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering FTF at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code FTF for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. That's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Now, back to the show.
We'll talk Zion in just a second, but first, a couple of big plays you might have missed. Nick Spurs, Dennis Smith Jr. with the off-the-board alley-oop to Mitchell Robinson.
Look at that. I mean, Dennis Smith Jr. has been a part of a few really good highlights this weekend. This is a terrible loss by the Spurs, by the way. Yeah, Knicks aren't even trying to win.
T-Wolves and Bucks from Saturday.
Oh,
Giannis
no!
thinks he had the dunk. Anthony Tolliver had other ideas.
Much respect going for this one. Because Giannis, I think he's second in NBA in dunks. Even trying to block this one, could that help defense? Oh, much respect
that
for that.
That is
now.
A great play that I am seeing for the first time this moment. Wow. Couldn't get this Bucks game.
Hawks and Pistons from Friday. Check out Trae Young. Between the legs, around the defender's back, sets up the dunk for Dwayne Dedman.
This was so nasty because he needed to pause to make the draw the defense to him, but he had to go back between his legs to get the defender there, create enough space and separation for the pass.
What
man, I like watching him play. I wasn't a huge fan, mm-hmm. Nick. You've got me more on his bandwagon. He's had an exciting rookie season. If Luka wasn't playing.
Exactly right. It'd be he and DeAndre Ayton competing for rookie of the year. He's been really, really good.
All right, moving on to Zion Williamson. He missed Saturday's much-hyped game against Syracuse with his now famous knee sprain. The sprain has sparked a national debate. Some say Zion should get back on the court when he's healthy. Others say he should shut it down to prepare for the NBA draft. Coach K said he's not rushing the freshman phenom back out onto the floor.
We would never play a kid who's not ready to play, or we would never play a youngster who didn't want to play. And so, you know, it's not about that. It's about he wants to play. You know, he loves being a Duke. He doesn't like being injured. It's not an injury that – it's an injury that you can get over in a shorter period of time. And there's just a protocol that we have to go through to make sure that he's completely ready. And we're not going to rush anything.
All right, Nick, let me ask you, do you think Zion should shut it down for the rest of the season?
Absolutely, unequivocally not. And this is one of the most ridiculous, to me, manufactured debates and controversies I can remember. He is not a football player. He is not a running back. He does not have a certain number of carries on his body. He also is a guy that chose to go to Duke to play in big games. Chose to go to Duke when he was with any other school in the country, he'd be the top recruit for their class. He chose to go to the one place where he was second or third going into it. Chose to play for that coach. Did all of this eyes wide open because he wants to get better. He wants to play basketball. And he wants to play on the biggest stage. There is no realistic basketball injury Zion Williamson could suffer that causes him to fall out of the top three. I don't even think fall out of the number one pick. And if today we found out Duke basketball is mired in a horrible scandal and the program was shut down for the year, death penalty for the season, you know what Zion Williamson would be doing the day he gets cleared by doctors?
Playing basketball.
Playing pickup ball at the Duke Rec Center. You know what all the best NBA players do in the summer? They go to UCLA and they play basketball. Basketball players play basketball year round. They might take 3 weeks to the south of France in the offseason on some super yacht, and then they're out hooping. Like, what basketball players shut it down to protect? It's never happened because it's so different. The injury risk is different than the other sports. The financial guarantees are different than the other sports. And the need to improve on a day-to-day basis, that's consistent with the sports, and he's got a great opportunity to do it.
When I talk to a lot of coaches, the top coaches, and one of the things that they really don't like about this generation of athlete and their parents or people handlers is that everyone has just forgotten about the process of developing a hooper, a football player, tennis. Everyone just wants the quick microwave express get there. Do you realize how good he's gotten in the last 2 months playing basketball at Duke? Because when you decide to go to Duke, not only the recruiting things, yes, they're available, but look at his other options, all right? He couldn't go to the NBA. He could have went to a developmental league, right? Mm-hmm. So what kind of medical staff do they have there? You think it's better than Duke and the pristine Duke hospitals and all those? Huh? What about the USA basketball? It's been under the leadership of what coach?
Coach K.
For how many years?
At least better than a decade now.
Oh, okay. So you're going to a university, not from a medical standpoint, that's going to be your best. It's going to be your best solution. From a coaching standpoint and your development, it's the best solution. From a fan standpoint, playing on the national stage, big audiences, big games, right, getting challenged to get better, that's the best place to be. So we need to stop having this. And the problem has been people who haven't played sports typically get on this. But now we've had some prominent athletes, people that have been successful. Now they've lost their mind. And they're starting to say, oh, you know something? He shouldn't play. We have Hall of Fame basketball players that say, oh, he shouldn't play. That player's wrong because they forgot about their development and how critical it was at this stage of their career. He does not have a jump shot. He does not have an intermediate game. All those things need to be developed, and they'll be developed best playing for Coach K and playing for Duke. So I'm with you. This is an idiotic conversation, debate to have. Hoopers, who?
And he needs to play in big games because when he goes number one overall, he's not going to play in a big game for at least 2 years. A minimum of 2 years when the Suns or the Cavs or the Bulls or whomever gets him. He is not going to be in the playoffs anytime soon. So those ACC tournament games, those NCAA tournament games, those will be at least something he can draw upon when he's in big NBA games. And here's what's happened here, in my opinion, Jenna. There are a lot of people similar to me that have an enormous issue with the NCAA, that have an enormous issue that Zion doesn't already have a shoe deal, that he's not able to sign autographs for money, that we saw the Duke Carolina ticket prices were more than Super Bowl ticket prices for some seats, and we saw he's not getting a cut of it. We know what Coach K makes. And some people can't help themselves, but if they feel that way about the NCAA, anytime something like this comes up, they cloud. They want to say, well, screw the NCAA. Okay, you can say screw the NCAA. Doesn't mean it's best for the player. Zion Williamson was not considered a top three pick before this season started. He has now made himself the unanimous number one pick that people say you would trade him for Anthony Davis straight up. Maybe you'd rather have Zion playing for Duke. In this instance, for this player, has been great for him.
And anyone can blow out their shoe, all right? That shoe he's wearing, the PG2, that's the most popular shoe worn in the NBA. So people are like, oh, man, he can get hurt. He can get hurt working out. Because like you said, if he's not at the rec center playing, whatever agent he decides to go to, he's going to be in some gym with some quality players playing against him. And these type of things can happen all the time. He slipped on the floor. His shoe did blow out. All right? That can happen anywhere. So you can't overreact because you don't like the NCAA and because he had a malfunction with his sneaker.
No, he's going to be more protected at Duke than he will be playing anywhere else. But he also wants to play. He wants to get back out there.
Oh, no, forget about that, though, Jenna. What the athlete wants and everything and his goal. Oh, that really doesn't matter. Everyone else wants to take direction of someone else's career, someone else's talent. That should be the most important thing. What does the kid want to do? And the kid has the type of attitude that we have seen. And that's why in America, the sports has been great because our best players, they all wanted to play. Thank God didn't give someone with Zion his ability and give them the work ethic of someone else, because I believe he has the right attitude. He picked the right school, and he's doing the right thing for his career.
All right, let's take a break there. Got to take a break. Coming up, oh, the Celtics struggling, but Kyrie not worried. Not even a little. Hear it from him next on First Things First. Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including many of the world's most popular self-improvement shows, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and even learn how to feel balanced while meditating. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get all that newfound balance back into your life. So start the year off right and start listening to podcasts on Spotify. The Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series is headed to Vegas. It is Sunday at 3:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. It is time for us to go viral. Former Oregon State wideout Rahmel Dockery took to social media to showcase the different personas of a wide receiver, from Mr. Footwork to the coach's son. Oh. All right, CeCe, where do you fall?
Oh, there's Butterfingers that we know. CeCe don't got no love for that. Coach's son.
Let's
What's this one?
Oh. Oh, he's still good. It's okay. Great job. Great job. Good effort. Good effort.
Blames the quarterback. Oh, this is good.
Cute.
See, he doesn't have a hands one that I can tell. The clumsy wide receiver.
Oh, there you go. Fall down.
There we go. Come on, man. Come on. Mr. Footwork is good, though.
Oh, the All-American. Oh, that was actually a great catch.
I prefer using something that's more useful. I don't know where these guys have all this time to make all these videos and everything. Well, now, that was well done.
But you would also note that he's being CG'd is former Oregon State wide receiver. So not currently playing anywhere necessarily. Maybe a coach somewhere on his own, a little instruction, trying to get a little like this
and
publicity
it worked.
From his videos. I got no problem with that.
No, I knew he wasn't any good. I knew he wasn't no star.
Stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. We start with the Cowboys. One former scout says the Cowboys have to lock up DeMarcus Lawrence as soon as possible. See, you think Dallas listens?
They better listen. Man, these guys are rare. You need one in the National Football League unless you're New England. Now, they do it by scheme, and they're going to make sure their guys are in the right place. But everyone else, man, you need a dude. And the Cowboys have one. Lock him up, man. He's earned it.
They listen. The Cowboys should listen. But one of my absolute tenets at my agency, is if you get this close to hitting free agency, you never sign the extension now. You've already played the games. You've already dealt with the injury risk. You've already been franchise tagged. Wait until free agency begins. See what the other offers are. Let the Cowboys make whatever offers they want. Those offers will still be there once the league year begins.
Yeah,
and
but
free
the question is,
started.
Do we lock him up? Yes, lock him
the
up.
The Cowboys should try, but DeMarcus, just be patient.
Yeah, it's his first day back from vacation. He ain't into it.
Just be patient.
Tune back at 7:30. He'll be hotter.
To the Steelers now. One former Pittsburgh player was critical of Big Ben over the weekend. Hines Ward saying the Steelers quarterback has to do more as a leader. See, you agree with Hines?
Well, I've known all along that there were some leadership problems, not only from Mike Tomlin, but there's been leadership problems with Ben Roethlisberger. He could have been a better leader. But at this point in your career, it's hard to be changing your leadership style. and based on the general manager.
Right.
The general manager has empowered Ben Roethlisberger. Hey, man, you're dealing with kids. You can tell them anything. So Ben Roethlisberger, he's had this problem for a long time, and I don't think he'll ever get that solved.
And the Steelers have made the clear choice to publicly endorse Big Ben's behavior and leadership style.
Yes.
When Kevin Colbert says it's Ben and 52 kids, as you alluded to, that is, I couldn't believe he said it, but that is giving Ben carte blanche to do what he wants.
And I'm sure there's other grown men in that locker room, Pouncey, Cam Hayward, especially in Cam Hayward, guy's never been involved in anything controversial. He's anything but a kid.
Absolutely right.
He's more responsible than Ben Roethlisberger ever will be.
How about the veteran on the team? He's a kid? Villanueva?
No.
Yeah. Both the Spurs and the Clippers lost yesterday. They currently sit at the 7 and 8 seed in the West, respectively. Nick, what does this mean now for the Lakers' chances?
Listen, it means the Lakers aren't dead yet because yesterday was really good for them. The Spurs losing to the Knicks.
Yes.
Clippers getting blown out. You would expect them to lose to the Nuggets, but getting blown out the way they did, it means the Lakers' loss to the Pelicans wasn't as damaging as it could have been. But the flip side is, had they just taken care of business against the Pelicans, they'd be in really good shape given those losses. But it gives the Lakers a little breath of life.
Yeah, it sets them up that they can still get into the playoffs. You make a great point that now seeing what the other teams, the Spurs and the Clippers, we thought the Clippers after the trade deadline, based on the moves they made, that they were punting on the season, trying to get into the lottery, trying to get a high pick. The Spurs, we didn't expect that. So everything is set up for the Lakers to make a huge turnaround here the last stretch of the season.
All right, things are going from bad to still bad for the Boston Celtics. Their latest loss, a tough one to the lowly Bulls over the weekend. In fact, of the four teams with the worst records in the NBA, the Celtics have now somehow lost to three of them. The loss to Chicago drops them to the fifth seed in the East, but Kyrie Irving says Boston will be just fine come playoff time.
You know, it is what it is. Like I said, I don't get frustrated about this stuff anymore. It's just part of the regular season, you know, in the playoffs when we could plan for a team, prepare for a team. You know, I still don't see anybody beating us in 7 games.
It's starting to get to a point where you're concerned the struggle you guys had over the weekend in the playoffs?
No, I'll be fine.
Why do you think that?
Because I'm here.
I guess LeBron told him to be a leader. He's trying to be a leader. He's listening. What do you think, Nick? What do you think about what Kyrie had to say?
Listen, Kyrie's not the problem. Kyrie wasn't the reason they lost to the Bulls, that horrible loss coming off a game where Kyrie was part of the problem, the one-point loss to the Bucks when Kyrie was really bad until the end. But the Bulls, he was excellent, and they got beat badly by a terrible team. He can say, I don't see any team beating them in 7 games. Not any team ahead of them in the standings that I could confidently pick them beating in 7 games, except for Indiana, who's without Oladipo, but still, by the way, has held on to its spot.
Right. I think that's the most shocking stat in the NBA this season. Right now, the Indiana Pacers being the third seed in the Eastern Conference.
They were the third seed when Oladipo got hurt.
Yes.
And everyone said, okay, they might fall out of the playoffs entirely or certainly to the bottom half of the bracket. And they're still there. The Celtics have been in fifth place in the East almost the entire year. And so even if they tick up a spot, you're looking at least you'd have home court for the first round, but not any time after that. And where are, other than Kyrie, let's just say Kyrie is a given, because the way he's playing right now, plus his playoff resume, I'll give that to him. I think he's earned it. I think Kyrie will show up and play well, assuming he's healthy. But who else do we know? Who else on the Celtics? We know we have a good idea of what Al Horford will give you, and that's it's very good defense, it's good leadership, and it's mediocre offensive numbers. But do we know what Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown? We might know what Gordon Hayward's going to give you in a negative way. Marcus Morris has been their second best player on the team this year. Kyrie's exuding confidence because maybe he has to. But deep down, I don't know that he can feel this way, because I don't know anyone can feel this way about the Celtics right
now.
Yeah,
I know that other Celtics don't feel that way. I believe that Kyrie is reaching. He's reaching a little bit for a LeBron-type quote. I don't believe he has the ability. I know I've seen him in the playoffs, but he's never taken over a series. He's never done what LeBron's done. So the confidence that his teammates have in him, they haven't seen Kyrie do it. I mean, they were just kids when Kyrie hits that shot against Golden State. What were they, in high school? playing AAU ball? You think they're going to take that type of confidence? No, they're not. So they're in a bad spot. You do not want to be in that fifth spot. You do not want to play a 6-7 game series with Philadelphia to start the playoffs. Like, no, that is not the way that you want to start. I can understand Kyrie trying to get this team to be like, listen, if we get in one of these series, I do believe in our team, but they don't believe in each other. So this, I understand. He tried to stay positive, but the way they're playing, they're not gelling as a team this late in the season. And we have only seen, and to me, there's only two players right now, maybe three, that will to say this. James Harden, if he was hurt, you go to the locker room and say, hey, man, you guys are struggling. Are you worried? He's like, no. Well, why not? Because I'm here. LeBron, okay, he can say that. Kyrie's not in that class. Just because he hit that shot to build in game 7 against the Warriors, to me, that doesn't carry over to carrying a team from the fifth spot in the Celtics with this young, unproven team together. Like, you don't get that courtesy from me.
I agree. I wasn't saying I think he can carry them to the finals. But the point I'm making is, even prior, other than that shot, he's got multiple 40-point playoff games. We know that the playoff moment won't be too big for Kyrie, but does that mean he can overcome what is right now a team that doesn't know what its identity is, a team that doesn't know who its second best player is, a team whose young blue chip prospects in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have not gotten 8% better?
I do
this
believe
year.
Kyrie's success will harm the Celtics team because they were successful without him. Kyrie Irving was successful without anyone else besides LeBron James. And he didn't want to give LeBron credit. So for me, that confidence, when you get in these playoff series, you know what Kyrie thinks right now? I can take it. That's not the way the Celtics are their best basketball team.
But not having an identity, not getting the guys to play together, lack of chemistry, doesn't that all fall on Brad Stevens?
Listen, there's not been a good year for Brad Stevens. I mean, remember last year, I thought he was coach of the year, and then he didn't get a single vote from his colleagues. And it was really interesting when Dwayne Casey won and the comments from some of the other coaches, when you read the articles where it was anonymous head coach this, a lot of people were saying, we've crowned him a little too early. Let's all calm down. You told me. You thought I crowned him a little too early when I said he is one of the best trade assets in the league, second best coach in the league to Popovich. He has not dealt with this season well, and we are now 75% of the way through it. Like, there is, it doesn't erase the good work he's done previously, but it does. Certain coaches are very good with certain teams. The best coaches are good. Mm-hmm. No matter what team you give me, I'll figure out a way to make it work. He has not yet figured out a way to make this team work.
All right, let's move on to some football now. Aaron Rodgers, after missing the playoffs for the second straight year, the Packers are bringing in a new head coach to try and right the ship. Some of the criticism in Green Bay has begun to shift towards Aaron Rodgers himself, and that does not sit well with his former wide receiver and friend, Jordy Nelson.
It doesn't make sense. I think it's comical when I read those comments. Everyone knows negativity sells that in all of media. If it's social media, print media, TV media, it's all about negativity. People feel better about themselves when they hear bad things about other people. That's why that gets more pub. I mean, no one wants to hear that Aaron's obviously a great quarterback, but a great leader and does everything right. All right, there's your story. What fun is that? So whenever they can go back to the well and get the same people saying the same stuff.
All right, see, what do you think about what Jordy Nelson had to say?
Well, Jordy Nelson, he's one of my favorite. And I've had conversations with Jordy Nelson, interviewing him, sitting down with him, spending time with him about Aaron Rodgers, about his career. So I got a lot of respect for Jordy Nelson in Jordy Nelson's career, which has been a very, very successful one. You won't hear a lot of sound bites. You won't hear Jordy Nelson being quoted, saying things about other teams, opposition. So for me, the guys who have not said a lot, when you do get a sound bite from them, you know, I listen with a little more attent ear because this is not what they do. And through the years, not only Jordy Nelson, Greg Jennings, Donald Driver, and others, they've supported Aaron Rodgers. But I think that, Nick, in conversating with you about this subject, I think that your take on it is very, very unusual. And it made me look at it a different way.
I think that, you know how sometimes I say with NBA players, they were underrated for so long, they became overrated. The pendulum swung too far in the other direction. I think something similar is happening with Aaron Rodgers. Not in the underrated, overrated discussion, but for so long, anything wrong with the Packers was everyone's fault but Aaron Rodgers. It was never on him. And a lot of that was because of his exemplary play.
Yes.
But then you were like, you know what? In 2015, he wasn't great. And he does seem to have, have a prickly leadership style. And all of a sudden, we started poking away at it. And now it's swung so far in this direction. It's like, man, coach killer.
Now he can't be coached.
He can't be coached. Who, you know what I mean? He wants to pick his quarterback coach, wants to pick his wide receivers. He isn't a good teammate. In fact, I heard his family don't even like him. Like, we have swung so far in that direction that I don't think that's fair. And I don't think that's right. And I think that Aaron Rodgers is demanding. The most talented player in the league should be. Aaron Rodgers is frustrated. A guy who has seen a team just have a philosophy about free agency up until very recently, which was we don't participate, that would frustrate just about anyone. And the most excellent players almost always have a standard of excellence they hold themselves to that is very hard to not hold other people to. And I'm curious to you, C. Sarge, and I brought it up on the show multiple times. But the first time you and I spent a lot of time together outside of work was that Super Bowl back in Houston. And so many people came up and were happy to see you, but not a lot of them were your teammates. And you joked with me and you said, man, because I was like, everybody loves you. You're like, well, not a lot of these are guys I played with. And I'm just curious what your teammates would have said about you were in the phase of your career that Aaron Rodgers.
I think sometimes when you are a leader, and sometimes when people within the organization, they believe that everything in the organization is centered around you. And also the talent. The talent level of Aaron Rodgers, it's hard to believe. It's the only time in football history that we have had the transition of a Hall of Fame quarterback to a more talented Hall of Fame quarterback. People say, oh, well, Joe Montana, Steve Young. Steve Young is not Joe Montana. And, man, Aaron Rodgers, if we were having an NFL draft of all the quarterbacks all time, Aaron Rodgers might get my first pick because he's that type of talent. And that type of talent, is his personality a little bit prickly? Yes. Is he a little bit different? Yes, a lot like the rest of us. So, to me, that being liked by your teammates is not as important as being respected. And for me, the people who have played with Aaron Rodgers, the coaches that have coached him, they got a great deal of respect for him and his leadership there in Green Bay.
And what exactly did Aaron Rodgers do? He didn't want Alex Van Pelt, his quarterback coach, fired. He seemingly wanted them to keep Jordy Nelson there. Sure, he may have butted heads with Mike McCarthy, but they hadn't made the playoffs in a couple years. McCarthy shouldn't have maybe kept his job and was on the table that he could have left. So a prickly personality, but you're right. He's that talented that he warrants the ability or the freedom and the leeway to be able to, I don't know, demand a few things.
And it doesn't mean that he can't be criticized. It doesn't mean that if we want to break down what was the incredible non-interception streak he was on this year, you could make the argument that streak might have actually been slightly to the Packers' detriment. That one of the reasons that he had so many throwaways and so few interceptions was because he wasn't taking as many chances as the team needed him to. You can make the argument that he approached the relationship with the young receivers this offseason the wrong way. That those young guys, sometimes you go to it's either the sugar cube or the whip. And sometimes you go to the whip when it was needed to go to the sugar cubes. Mm-hmm. Like, some of these criticisms are fair. But we just went so quickly from none of the Packers' problems are Aaron Rodgers' fault to all of them are his fault.
Yes.
That it didn't make sense to me. And I'm very curious to see how he deals with this season in the twilight of his prime with a new head coach in a team that's got a couple first-round picks that could be very active, either moving up in the draft, trading picks, player acquisition. Like, see how this version of Aaron Rodgers is and how the commentary from his former and current teammates sounds after this coming season.
Hey, I could be prickly. You guys know that. You still love me so much, a lot. There's a lot of love. Coming up are LeBron and the Lakers. You'll agree after in the break, probably. Mm-hmm. Are they in danger of missing the playoffs? That's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Mannix joins
the
party.
What's up, man? Good to be back.
We love having you here. All right, should have been a rough weekend for the Houston Rockets. They had to face the Warriors.
I want to talk to you about a bunch of other stuff.
In Golden State, without an injured James Harden, but they did have Chris Paul, and as a result, the Rockets did beat Golden State 118-112. It was a vintage CP3 performance, 23 points, 17 assists, and he passed the 9,000 assist mark. Chris Mannix, how far can this Rockets team go if they have this version of Chris Paul?
This version of Chris Paul is great with James Harden out, just like James Harden without Chris Paul out was great. But the reason the Rockets have half a chance of getting past Golden State has nothing to do with Chris Paul or James Harden. It's the guys they picked up over the last month.
Ooh, yes.
The deals... The offseason for the Rockets wasn't very good. Like, they let go of a couple of guys, Trevor Ariza, Luke Mbamute. We can debate how much Mbamute was actually worth to that team. Mm-hmm. But they were in some trouble prior to the buyout period when they grabbed Kenneth Faried and they grabbed Austin Rivers. I don't think I've seen a reclamation project like Kenneth Faried in the last... in the last couple of months. Kenneth Faried, he's averaging 16 points and 10 rebounds with the Rockets. Austin Rivers comes out of nowhere let go with Washington. He's giving you 10 points in 33 minutes per game. Where would this team be without those two players? They wouldn't be in this position right now. So I think Chris Paul and James Harden are playing at this level and can continue to play at this level. The question about beating Golden State comes down to can Faried, Rivers, and the rest of that supporting cast play at the same level the supporting cast last year did.
And that's why when I lived in Houston and once the trade deadline, or I'm sorry, in the offseason, once free agency would happen, we would do an annual radio interview with Daryl Morey. And he would always say the number one thing NBA fans mistake is that your team on November 1st, this was back when the season started about November 1st, is not the team you're going to go into the playoffs with. And one of the reasons the Rockets have always been cautious about using their full mid-level exception, if we're going to use really nerdy terms, is because they want to save a little extra money. So when the buyout market happens, they're not just offering the minimum. They can offer a little more than other teams. And they keep a roster spot open for when, oh, my goodness, we need Austin Rivers. Kenneth Faried's available. They would have been a spot potentially for DeAndre Jordan had he been bought out. So now all of a sudden, the Rockets look like, okay, they have their rotation. CP3, Harden, Eric Gordon, P.J. Tucker, Clint Capella. That's the starting five from last year. But now a front court backups of Kenneth Faried and Nene with a backcourt backups of Austin Rivers and Gerald Green. You're only going to play nine guys against Golden State at most. Mm-hmm. You trust all of those guys. And so now you're seeing who they actually can be. And the most important thing to me, though, is, of course, if Chris Paul stays healthy. Because we know that to steal a line from Draymond Green, there are 82-game players and there are 16-game players, meaning guys that can do it in the postseason. I don't care about Chris Paul's postseason lack of team success. We know in the postseason he can be an extraordinary player as long as he's out there on the court.
Yeah, I think it speaks to a couple different areas. Number one, to your point, they got a great culture for an offensive player there in Houston. Austin Rivers, I saw in the game, they isolated him three times in a row. I was like, when's the last time? That was high school? The last time he got isolated three times in a row, two times able to make very, very efficient plays, one time scoring the ball, one time helping his teammates. Faried, what he's doing, bringing the five out to the shooting the three-pointer, playing with energy. And then one of the things that we don't see that often in the league, this team plays together. So that culture that they have there, the effect the head coach has on the players offensively, but once you come into that building, because he told us, they don't practice a lot. But guys like being there. They like being on the team. And you can see it playing off on the back end of this roster. So for me, it's not about Chris Paul and what he did. Because you know what they did? They ran the same sets that they ran for James Harden. They ran a double high pick and roll and let Chris Paul work. And if you helped into the lane, he dished it outside. So he had control of the game the way Harden did. So I believe that that is duplicatable. But these other players and the roles that they're playing and team-wise, playing together in this NBA, as you guys know, it means an awful lot coming down the stretch.
But the last time I think you were on, Mannix, we talked about how sustainable this is for James Harden. If he's going to have to do it, if he can do it, isn't it at least a little pressure off him knowing he doesn't have to do it every night?
Enormous amount of pressure. When I was down in Houston a few weeks back, I was talking to their coach. I said, you know, what do you think of all this? Like, we got to get help. Like, you know, it's awesome to watch all this happening. But they know a couple of years ago when they flamed out against San Antonio in the second round, that was largely because I think James played all 82 that year, and he was just exhausted when he went up against a top-tier defensive team, and he had to deal with everything all by himself. So having Chris Paul playing at this level is incredible for them. But on the flip side of it, if you look at Golden State, they might have a looming DeMarcus Cousins problem. Like, DeMarcus Cousins with that team, offensively, he's fine, even though, strangely enough, they're 6 points better offensively with DeMarcus off the floor. But defensively, you watch that game last night and watch every game that DeMarcus Cousins
pick and roll him to death.
Pick and rolling him to death. That's a problem for this team because, like, everybody's going to do that. And you can say, well, just take him off the floor. But DeMarcus already has had some kind of grumbles already. He's already kind of said, he's already been like, you know, I don't know if I like this.
He's not playing in crunch
time. But which is a little bit surprising because he should have known coming in that this was the deal. Like, this was the story with DeMarcus Cousins. You knew you were coming into a ready-made championship contender. You were coming in there to rehab your body and rehab your image. Mm-hmm. And if he starts grumbling, the latter's not going to work.
I think you're doing a great job making the point of Golden State. Watch out. There might be some rumblings because now that they've removed the restriction minutes, because it made sense him not playing to end the games before because he was on restricted minutes. Now they've removed that. Just listen to his interviews. He's had a couple little spicy little interviews and seeing these competitive games and you're not on the court because it doesn't only mean something for this year's team. It means more of him going to free agency. Do we make him a max guy? And these guys are selfish about their money, so that's something to watch. Great point by you. Something to watch coming down the stretch.
I'm serious about Kenneth Faried, too. If I have a most improved player vote, he should get most improved player for half a season. Like, he was stapled to the bench in Brooklyn and has done nothing for the last couple years.
Not like there's some horrible story in Brooklyn. No, they're developing their players. They're winning. They're in playoff form.
He has been a godsend for that Rockets
team. The least improved player I'd give to Jaylen Brown, but we can talk about it later. On the Rockets Warriors, just real quick. Over the last 2 years, the Rockets are 8-5 against them. 8-5. Mm-hmm. That includes regular season, postseason. They're 3-0 against them this year in the regular season. The Warriors are one game up on Denver. It's not like these Warriors don't care. The Warriors want home court advantage.
Engaged.
They saw last year, not having home court advantage, how much that could hurt you by the time you get to the conference finals, once you have to go through the gauntlet of the Western Conference playoffs. Like, there is an element of the Rockets, and since the Warriors have had Kevin Durant, they have rolled over everyone, including LeBron's Cavs, except for the Houston Rockets in that series last year, except for the Houston Rockets in the regular season. The Rockets won 3 in a row in the regular season. Like, even if you remove the playoffs, they have a winning record against Golden State. There is something there. And to do it without the last one they won was without Chris Paul, the overtime when James Harden hit the three. This one to do it without James Harden, there's something to be said for that. And the DeMarcus Cousins point is something definitely to watch because they will run a high pick and roll every play he's on the court,
and force him
off the court.
Every single time.
All right, Chris, we'll see you a little bit later on the show. Got to take a break.
Oh, you want to talk Jaylen Brown? Is that what you want
later?
Coming up, can Kyler Murray assert himself as the number one quarterback in the draft with a strong combine? Next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we are going viral. So Duke took down Syracuse 75-65 Saturday, and though Zion Williamson was sidelined with an injury, the stars were still out at the Carrier Dome. Gronk in the house, sitting courtside, representing the Syracuse Orange.
Okay, Gronk.
What
about
the?
Don't forget about the two brothers there. One's got a jersey on with his gun showing.
Oh yeah. You know who else was there? Very own Ryan Brumley. He made the trek up to Syracuse
for the
game. Absolutely, man. I almost
for what?
To check out the basketball game.
Oh, he's Zion wasn't playing, I'm saying, for what?
Well, I think he had made the plans ahead of time and taken a game in one of the best basketball arenas in the world, the Carrier Dome. 35,000 plus there, see. We'll go sometime next year. I'll take you.
No, thank you.
No, well, all right.
Hey, the scouting combine is fast approaching. All eyes are on how much Kyler Murray participates. A lot of questions surrounding that decision. What does he have to prove? What do you want to see from him? And can he raise or drop his stock? One anonymous scout said he doesn't think it matters if Kyler throws at the combine. See, do you agree with that?
I don't think it matters that he throws because he threw the ball so accurate in playing for Oklahoma. Like, it doesn't matter as much to combine when you're doing stationary. We haven't seen a lot of the top flight quarterbacks who we believe are first round picks who don't throw well at the combine. There is the odd Cam Newton. Cam could not hit a guy for some odd reason, and it actually led us to believe it confirmed what we knew, that he was not going to be an accurate passer early in his career. But normally, these workouts, they're staged, they go through so many dry runs doing it that most guys are very accurate throwing the football if they're accurate during the game. So it won't affect his overall draft. I think some of the other things become important. the type of leader he is, what size hand he has, what's his body weight, is also his body fat, because it 190 with a different body fat is different 190 if his shoulders are as wide as we think, because I met him. And he doesn't have as big a shoulders as Baker. Doesn't have bigger shoulder as Russell Wilson. So for me, his frame is a little more narrow. Now, in these 2 months leading up to it, did he build up his body?
They say, I read this morning, he says he's 206 now.
Yes.
So and so to your point on body
fat. I couldn't judge him because I didn't get the full rub down.
Yeah, but I
touched the groceries and everything.
We know.
I had him around 200, Jill. You know how I do shoulders, triceps, all that.
Yeah, oh, I know.
Chris will do a full hands-on inspection if you'll let him, and you're a football prospect. People should know this in case they ever run into him on the street.
No, that's not true. No, that's not true.
All right, and so as the, thank you, Jenna Wolf. Let me just handle this one. But here's my question. Why would he not throw? I understand you're saying that a lot of guys haven't. But
right. I'm just confirming what the scout says.
But so I'm just
is he still going to be a top 10 pick, I think, in the draft, regardless if he throws or not?
I just don't know the down for if I'm Kyler Murray, and obviously I'm not, but if I'm Kyler Murray, I know what the negatives are going to be. My height and maybe my hand size. He knows what his hand size is. So we won't find out. He knows if that's going to be a positive or negative. You also know what your positives are going to be. Remind people of them again and again and again. It's why during the lead up to the combine, one of the things, and I'm not trying to overemphasize this, but one of the things I would, if I were consulting with him, I'd be telling him, man, you are going to get a public speaking and an interview coach today, and we're going to drill this the way you drill a 7-step drop or a 5-step drop, because that is something. He had no reason to be trained for that. I do not criticize guys who are everyone out there that's a pro football player is a better professional speaker than I would be as a professional speaker, pro football player. So I'm not judging him for it. But guys will. And he's going to have to do public and private interviews. So I want to work on privately the things I'm not good at. And I want to show the world publicly the things I know I'm great at. He knows he can throw the football. So I just don't know why he wouldn't do it. I don't know the downside for him
to participate. The reason why he wouldn't do it is because a lot of these kids, they get away from who they really are. We talked about Zion. Man, Hooper's who? He's a ball player. Man, he can play professional baseball and professional football. He's a baller. Like, he should be out there competing. But when you attach yourself with certain agencies and certain marketing, then you get into the business side. Well, what's in your best interest? Typically, it's always in the athlete's best interest to compete. And everyone's at the combine. That's why he should compete there.
But realistically, say he does have a bad day at the combine with the things we know he's good at. Is that really going to drop his stock?
I think if Lamar, for example, Lamar Jackson, they had real questions about his accuracy and throwing ability. If he were to last year combine have a terrible day throwing, I think it really hurts a guy like that. A guy like Kyler, we know he can throw. So I don't think one bad day when it's like, man, these aren't receivers he's familiar with. That's why I would encourage him to do it.
There's some built-in excuses.
Right. And we have so much film of him throwing the ball well. So I don't think it can hurt him that much. And because of the baseball part of it as well, I want to give everyone more validation that I'm here to compete.
Right.
I'm here to be a quarterback. How many guys, whether it really matters or not, hear, you know what? This guy wants to win every drill. This guy competes every snap.
That's like the guy I want to be the face of my franchise.
We hear that from the guys who make these types of decisions. If I'm Kyler, I want to show everyone I am that guy.
I heard Dwayne Haskins, he was at Disney World. I think he took his sister to Disney World recently. And they asked him, well, what have you been doing? He said, I've been preparing for my first job interview. So that's what Kyler should be doing. In your first job interview, would you prevent a certain amount of information, that being not throwing at the combine? Everyone is there to see you.
Yeah.
Everyone's there to see your talent. I just believe you should reveal everything in that first interview. It's best for you. What if you have one team that doesn't like you not participating? So that's one less team that's available to be able to draft you.
That's a good point. All right, let's take a break. Get back to some basketball on the other side. How much is LeBron to blame for the Lakers being outside the playoff picture? That's next on First Things First. Two of the best round for pound pound-for-pound fighters on the planet, put their perfect records on the line at AT&T Stadium for the World Welterweight Championship. That is March 16th. It is live on pay-per-view. It's going to be great. We will get to LeBron in a second, but first, couple of big plays you might have missed. Knicks and Spurs. Check out Dennis Smith Jr. with the off-the-backboard alley-oop to Mitchell Robinson.
This is a nice pass, but tell me why didn't Dennis Smith, it ain't like he's scoring a bunch of buckets. Why didn't he take that layup, bro?
Oh, come on, man. A little,
come on.
Get the team juiced up.
Wouldn't it make
get
the
Mitchell
show.
Robinson going. He already had some huge highlight dunks this
okay,
weekend.
I just wanted to see if it's legitimate.
Bucks. Giannis getting just stopped by Anthony
Tolliver.
See
this, Nick? When you go on vacation, you don't have Wi-Fi, you miss this right here. Eat that, Giannis.
All right, I made sure I did have Wi-Fi. However, I was not able to get NBA League Pass International, so I couldn't see this game. I didn't see this highlight until this morning. That is a great play by Tolliver.
Finally, to the AAF, Birmingham defensive back Jack Tocho comes up with the acrobatic interception.
Oh, a little tip ball. Oh, double tip. Oh, nice play, young fella.
I watched this whole game.
You a lie.
That was a great catch.
You a lie.
Yeah, that ball hit the ground, though. That shouldn't have been a completion. Oh. That ball moved in his hand.
Oh,
watch when
see.
The point hits. Watch this. Watch his hand move. You see that on the other side? I was watching the other side, Jenna.
Okay.
I was watching that with you.
Because
my Wi-Fi be working.
That was fun. Uh-huh. Back to the Lakers. Another bad loss over the weekend, this time to the Pelicans, a team they tried to trade most of their team to last month, a team that was playing without Anthony Davis. The end of the season is fast approaching, and right now, this Lakers team is on the outside of the playoff bubble. LeBron said he knew the season would not be an easy one.
I know it's going to be very challenging just because of the experience that the roster had at that point in time. I knew it was going to be challenging from that sense, but I felt like we could still play better basketball. And we was doing that, and obviously, it sucks that my injury happened, and Zoe's injury happened, and so many of our injuries had, we had suspensions in it. So, I'm so huge in, chemistry and camaraderie, and throughout the course of the season, through injuries and suspensions that happened over the rest of the injuries have, it's taken a toll on our team.
Look, you look at what LeBron has been through this season between trying to get these guys to play, dealing with his injury, trying to make the playoffs. Would you say this signing with the Lakers has been the biggest challenge of his career?
No. This season might be the hardest season for him to have a championship-level team than any season he's had since his first couple in the league. But the biggest challenge of his career was going back to Cleveland because he made a promise there that if he did not keep, he would be looked at totally differently. I am coming back. I am going to win a championship. And the moment he makes that promise, a team out west became a juggernaut. He made that promise not knowing Golden State was coming because nobody knew Golden State was coming the way it did. And so the biggest challenge that he had was going back to Cleveland, winning a championship in Cleveland, back from 3-1 down against that Warriors team in Cleveland. That will be the biggest challenge he has ever faced.
Yeah, I like what Nick is talking about as far as Cleveland. That was the biggest challenge, especially after, as he called, Miami going off to college.
Yes.
And him being able to get his doctorate in championship and all the myths that were dispelled by him winning there in Miami. Him going back, I would say that was the most challenging. But once you make that, you accept that challenge, there become challenges within that. And trying to defeat Golden State with the injuries, Kyrie being out part-time, Kevin Love being out part-time, I believe those to be more significant than the challenge he faced with the Lakers. And, I mean, what were we expecting in year number one? In Cleveland, we had championship aspirations for LeBron James. He had to win a championship there. In year number one, he doesn't have to win a championship. They do have to get into the playoffs. So I think that what we're looking for from LeBron was totally different when he made that initial, I'm going back home.
But the other difference is, and the other reason why this year is different and a different type of challenge than any other year, is LeBron is clearly in a different place in his career. I still think he's the best player in the world because I think he showed that unanimously the last time the games really mattered. The 8 weeks of the postseason last year. He was so far and away better than every other player in the league from the beginning of the playoffs to the end of the playoffs just 6 months ago, 8 months ago, whenever that was. But what he can't do right now that he was able to do, forget second time in Cleveland, first time in Miami. Let's go back to his first time in Cleveland. Go look at the rosters that won 66 games. 60 games. Because LeBron would play 40 minutes a night.
Yes.
Do everything. Be one of the very best defenders in the world while also carrying an offense. He can't do that anymore. That was it, he was not as good of a postseason player then as he is now. But in the regular season, night in, night out, you were just – I think the Cavs one year went 39-2 at home, at least 38-3. Like, he was never losing at home. He was giving – and so even though his stat lines are almost identical, he's actually averaging his career high in rebounds this year, fourth most career in assists per game this year. The play-to-play impact and the fact that in order to produce those offensive numbers, he has to rest defensively, visibly rest defensively, shows that – for the first, not for the first time, but more so than almost any other time in his career, his supporting cast really matters. And this is one of the least experienced and least accomplished supporting casts he's ever had.
Who do you blame this year if the Lakers don't make the playoffs, CeCe?
Well, it's hard to blame injury. But as LeBron talked about in his interview there, the injuries have killed the continuity. Not only LeBron's 18 games, Rondo's significant, Lonzo Ball, his development being interrupted by a couple different injuries. So the injuries, you have to talk about it. It's not an excuse. But the blame publicly will go to Luke Walton. He will get fired if they don't make the playoffs. But you got to look at Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson. What did they do this offseason to put those other pieces around them? And have they hired the right people from a basketball operations to develop young players? Because I saw Randle playing there with the Pelicans.
Julius Randle, yep.
All right, man, he's pretty good NBA player. They just gave up on him, and he was a lottery pick for him. D'Angelo Russell just became the youngest NBA player to score 40 points on his birthday this weekend in Brooklyn. I mean, he was in your building. Magic Johnson said, I need a point guard. I need a leader. They shipped him off. So there's question marks that will go around. The blame will start right there with Luke Walton. He'll lose his job, but you have to look at Pelinka and Magic and be able to blame them.
Listen, obviously, LeBron will be a focal point, an enormous focal point of the blame if they miss the playoffs. In the NBA, if you're one of the best players, if not the best player in the league, you're supposed to make the playoffs. The only asterisk that will be there is they will have a playoff caliber record in games LeBron plays. This is the first time in his career he's missed real time with injury. And if they miss the playoffs, that will be the reason why. But LeBron also will have to look at it. I don't think this part will be fair, but people will put the Anthony Davis saga on LeBron's head. People will say Rich Paul is Anthony Davis's agent. That's LeBron's agent. That's LeBron's guy. And how much of the Lakers' continuity was disrupted by the Anthony Davis trade rumors. But as far as the coach and the GM goes, I'm going to use the two best in the league for this example. If Daryl Morey, who I believe is the best GM in basketball, were running the Lakers this offseason, what type of supporting cast does he put around LeBron James? Does he re-sign KCP, bring in Rondo, bring in JaVale, bring in Michael Beasley, who, by the way, those four offseason acquisitions are the four worst net rating of anyone on the Lakers. Mm-hmm. Beasley's gone now. Or does he surround LeBron with cheap, talented shooters like seemingly the entire basketball world thought, wait, why are they not doing that? And then on the coaching side of things, Greg Popovich were the coach of the Lakers. Greg Popovich lost Kawhi Leonard mm-hmm. this summer. And you know what? The Spurs, they're going to win 45 games. They're going to make the playoffs. They're playing poorly right now. They've been excellent at home. They just can't win on the road this year. Could you have a real rotation? Would you not be in a position where, against the Pelicans, Rajon Rondo plays 26 minutes, but 17 of the 26 are consecutively without a break? That's a high school coaching error. That's a, oh, my God, I forgot to take him out. That's the type of thing where the backup's like, hey, I missed my spot in the rotation, coach, and the guy apologizes at halftime. Sorry, I forgot about you, Jimmy. Like, and yeah. So if you had league standard team building or coaching, would the Lakers have three more wins, 5 more wins. And then we're not talking about any of this. But ultimately, in the NBA, it's on your best player.
Right.
And if you miss the playoffs, a lot of it's going to be on your best player. And that's fair or not, that's the way it's always been done.
Mm-hmm.
When Kevin Garnett struggled in Minnesota, they always made the playoffs. They just got bounced. Like, one of my big knocks on Kobe is missed the playoffs as soon as Shaq left and then couldn't get out of the first round
prime.
For 2 straight years. So it's either got to be on LeBron to a degree, or is he not in his prime anymore? Either one of those questions don't end with, to Chris's point, he's the best player in the world still. So that's what these last 20-some games have at stake for him.
All right, you mentioned Daryl Morey on the other side. Do the Rockets have a chance of taking down the Warriors? That's next on First Things First. Clear, Joe, we start with the Cowboys. One former scout says they have to lock up DeMarcus Lawrence as soon as possible. CC, you think the Cowboys listen?
Oh, they should listen. You franchise a guy that he's proven it. He's been a 3-down player. They said, oh, man, he's just a rush specialist. Oh, no, he's proved he can play. He's one of the top rushers we have in the league. Give the man his money. Let's go, Cowboys.
The Cowboys would be very fortunate if he agrees to any extension before he hits true free agency. Guys, it's very hard for star players to hit free agency because of the franchise tag, because football's so dangerous, guys take extensions early. He's now dealt with all the risk. The reward is letting every team bid on you. So I wonder if his agent is going to take any type of deal for him before free agency hits. Cowboys be fortunate to get him locked up early.
Let's move on to the Steelers now. One former Pittsburgh player was critical of Big Ben over the weekend. Hines Ward says the Steelers quarterback has to do more as a leader. CC, you agree with Hines Ward?
Yeah, I agree with Hines Ward. I also believe if Hines Ward was letting everything out, he'd say he had issues with Ben Roethlisberger that might be very similar to what AB is going through. But also, Hines Ward was there before Ben Roethlisberger got there. He saw the transformation of a young kid from Miami of Ohio coming in, taking over one of the great franchises, and had immediate success. So he's seen how Ben has evolved. So, yes, listen to Hines Ward.
Here's the deal. The Steelers made a choice. They have clearly made a choice that Big Ben not only is the face of the team, but the unquestioned leader of the team, and we're not going to try to change the way he
And that's
leaves.
Not a choice that they just made. They have been making that choice over and over again the last 15 years.
And now the excuses are gone, because Le'Veon Bell's going to be gone, Antonio Brown's going to be gone, and so there's not going to be any of these other potential distraction issues. Kevin Colbert came out and said it's Big Ben and 52 kids. Forget that one of the kids is Andrew Villanueva, who was an Army veteran. Forget Cam Hayward, Joe Hayden, these grown men. No, it's Big Ben and his 52 children. Okay, let's see how that works out for Pittsburgh next season.
All right, moving on to the NBA. It should have been a rough weekend for the Houston Rockets. They had to face the Warriors in Golden State without an injured James Harden. But they did have Chris Paul, and as a result, Rockets beating up on Golden State 118-112. It was a vintage CP3 performance. 23 points, 17 assists, and he passed the 9,000 assist mark. Nick, how far can the Rockets go if they have this version of Chris Paul out on the court?
They can win the championship. They're the only team, I believes they can beat the Warriors. And that's a big part. And it's a big part of competing with a team in a series is the legitimate belief we are prepared for this. We were built for this, and it will not take a bunch of good luck and good fortune. We don't need every ball to bounce our way to beat you. I'm not saying they'd be favored. They'd be heavy underdogs. But almost every team in NBA history would be heavy underdogs against this version of the Warriors. But 8-5 in your last 13 against Golden State is a real thing. Winning all 3 matchups against Golden State in this regular season is a real thing. Beating them in overtime without Chris Paul, and following that up by beating them in a game you basically led from start to finish. They had a 20-point lead at one point. Without James Harden in Golden State, that's a real thing. So this team, Daryl Morey told us, they are obsessed with Golden State.
Yeah.
They now have a fully flushed out roster, which they didn't have at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
They're the only team that if they beat Golden State in a series this year, I wouldn't be gobsmacked by. They're the only team that if they play Golden State, I would say, you know what? They could beat them.
Yeah, one thing that they have, amongst other things, is they have a culture that has respect for Golden State, but has also faced Golden State under the fire. Because a lot of people say, oh, man, we'll beat Golden State, OKC. They haven't been able to, with Paul George and Russ, they haven't faced Golden State as we know them. Houston is the only team that's done it and had some success. They don't have young players. They got a veteran coaching staff, veteran organization outside of the owner being a little young in ownership, him being new at that. So to me, they have the right type of culture. And when you have played Golden State and you have two superstars in Chris Paul and James Harden, yes, you have that ability to be able to beat Golden State. The system that they play, how it attacks Golden State and how they match up with them defensively, that is a way to be able to beat Golden State. So I'm sure that Houston is the only team that has that type of confidence to be able to beat the world champs.
But for the last 30-some-odd games, we weren't sure they had two superstars. We knew they had two superstar players in Harden and Chris Paul, but we weren't sure which Chris Paul we were going to get when he came back from injury. It is very nice to see that Chris Paul could come out and maybe give James Harden a breather or a break one night, or the ability to not have to put up 30 or more points.
Yes, but we also have to respect the injury that Chris Paul had. That injury at Chris Paul's age, just like LeBron. All right, LeBron, it took him a long time to be able to recover and recover not only not the basketball part, but the cardio part where he can be able to take over a game. So I think that our expectations for Chris at the beginning were unrealistic. That's why Harden was dominant on the ball. That's why they went through Harden. And now with Harden being out, you could see in this matchup Saturday, they ran the same sets that they ran for Harden, two high pick and rolls, and then let Chris Paul make all the decisions as far as who's going to get shots and when he's going to be the orchestrator of the offense. So I believe it's duplicatable. Now, the question I have for James Harden, can you be off the ball for a quarter and let Chris Paul do what he did in the Golden State? Because when he's on the ball and playing the point, we don't see this type of action, but they're going to need a two-man to be able to do this, and they have to be able to do it the same way. But will Harden be able to do it off the ball? That's the part that I question.
And can Harden take that opportunity to rest a bit on offense, which is where he never gets to rest, and he has to rest on defense? One other thing that happened in this game, and Chris Mannix pointed out, I think it was a very smart point. The Rockets made DeMarcus Cousins unplayable. Because DeMarcus Cousins has never been a good defender, and they will high pick and roll you to death. Mm-hmm. I know there were some smart NBA people I disagreed with them, but the reason they thought DeMarcus Cousins to Golden State was not a good move for Golden State was their offense was already at near peak capacity. So your offense isn't going to get better. And is he going to make your defense worse?
And they were a top five defensive team through this championship run.
Absolutely. Is he going to make your defense worse? And then if you have to take him off the court, is there going to be some unhappiness, some unpleasantness, and some distraction? Because the Warriors are totally comfortable. Draymond, Iggy, KD, Steph, Klay being that five. But that involves, it's one thing when that means Kevon Looney is not getting minutes or Zaza's not getting minutes.
Right.
Another thing when it's DeMarcus Cousins. Okay. So that's just something to watch because the Rockets are clearly fine with DeMarcus Cousins being out there because they think they can outscore you if he is.
All right, time now for Put a Grade on It, sponsored by CarMax. Chris Paul, the aforementioned, had a vintage performance, 23 points, 17 assists, and a win over Golden State. CC, put a grade on Chris Paul's night.
I'm going to give Chris Paul an A because of the things he did. I don't like the five turnovers because there were a couple critical times he dribbled a little too much to turn the ball over, but his ability to be able to score, orchestrate the offense, and even though Golden State made a couple runs at him, man, he made some key plays to be able to stop those runs. So he's going to get an A from me.
An absolute A. He gave 36 minutes, which is more minutes than he's played at any point this season, to my recollection. Also, the Rockets coming off that terrible loss to the Lakers. If you look at their next few games, they have a very difficult upcoming schedule. Mm-hmm. This could have been a spot where they lose four or five, where they drop in the standings. This was a great win, a confidence-building win. Chris Paul had his best game all season. I give him an A as well.
All right, two A's. Take a break coming up. How far can Kyrie carry the Celtics? Next, now first things first. Back here with Chris Mannix, we're going viral. Mahershala Ali took home an Oscar last night for Best Supporting Actor, but before he was a Hollywood superstar, he was a D1 athlete. Check him out, playing at St. Mary's back in the mid-90s.
I found this out yesterday. I had no idea. I thought the best St. Mary's alum was Patty Mills, which I guess he's still the best as far as NBA players, but
look at Mahershala Ali.
He got game.
Oh, well done, sir. It was a big night for him.
He hadn't aged a bit. He looks exactly the same.
He looks the exact same. He was Remy on the Netflix show House of Cards. But last night was a big night for him.
Yeah.
It was the True Detective season finale. No spoilers.
Oh, my goodness. He's amazing.
He's spectacular in that.
And
this is his second Oscar, right?
Yeah.
So he won an Oscar for Moonlight. Shout out to Mahershala Ali. I got you covered on that. Good to see you,
okay,
man.
There you go. Appreciate it.
No problem.
I don't see any of the Oscar movies. I just haven't. No,
it's called Green Book. I figured you'd see it.
No. I'll teach you something
everything
about
green.
Everything
green.
Let me teach you something about TV.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You ain't have to say that. People won't know if I saw it.
Okay. Well, it's a great movie. Great movie.
You don't have to say that either.
I'll just sit here quietly.
You don't have to say much.
You're going to have to say a lot here, though.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Back to the NBA. Things are going from bad to still bad for the Boston Celtics. Their latest loss, a tough one to the lowly Chicago Bulls over the weekend. Of the four teams with the worst records in the NBA, the Boston Celtics have now somehow lost to three of them. The loss to Chicago drops them to the fifth seed in the East, but Kyrie Irving says Boston will be just fine come playoff time.
You know, it is what it is. Like I said, I don't get frustrated about this stuff anymore. It's just part of the regular season, you know, in the playoffs, and we could plan for a team, prepare for a team. You know, I still don't see anybody beating us in seven games.
It's starting to get to the point where you're concerned the struggle you guys had over the weekend in the playoffs?
No, I'll be fine.
Why do you think that?
Because I'm here.
This is the most I have heard Kyrie Irving speak in a season in a long time. He must have gotten a lot out of the phone call from LeBron, who said, step up and be a leader. What do you make of what Kyrie had to say this time now, Chris?
It's almost like that scene in Animal House with Kevin Bacon. Like, remain calm, all is well.
Right.
I'm here, and I'm going to be able to lead them.
That was Nick Wright last year when we were talking about the Cavs.
The Cavaliers.
And we were like, Nick, you're not worried? No.
The difference is everything was going to be fine.
Look,
with the Cavs.
That loss was the worst of the season by far. That was a Bulls team that earlier in the season they won by 30-something, and then in December it was 56. So you go into Chicago again, and you just don't respect the game like that. You just go out there and you say, you know, we can just sleepwalk through this one. They couldn't, and they lost. There are real problems within the Celtics right now. They just have played from day one like a team that doesn't want to play together. That has, you know, separate factions. I'm not saying it's a personal thing within that locker room, but guys that are in different places in their professional careers and just don't want to be a part of everything that's going on.
How could that not be a personal thing?
Well, I don't look at it as like Jason Tatum doesn't like Kyrie Irving or Jaylen Brown doesn't like Gordon Hayward. I just think you have those young guys who are coming off what they did last year to come within one game of beating LeBron James and advancing the finals. And then all of a sudden they're asked to take not one step back, but basically three steps back. I mean, Terry Rozier has been a shell of the player that we once saw.
Yes.
This was a guy that was, you know, the start of the season, and maybe you can still see this, but he was barreling towards a $15 to $20 million per year contract next offseason as a restricted free agent. Now, I don't know what it's going to be for Terry Rozier. They just have not connected from day one. And I've been defending them for a while because it's like, all right, it's a new group. Give them time. But here we
are. They're still talented.
Look, they're still talented. And if you want to take the rosy aspect of this, they play down to their competition. They play up to everybody else. I mean, against Toronto, they're 2-1. Against Philadelphia, they're 3-0.
That game against Milwaukee, they lost, but it's a one-point
loss. Very close game. They're 1-2 against Milwaukee with that game. We saw how they played against Golden State this year and how they've played against them in previous years. Outside of Golden State, they're 4-3 against playoff teams in the Western Conference. So against top-tier teams, they step up their game. They've got Toronto tomorrow night. They could beat Toronto. They could walk into Toronto and win that game. But if you can't get up for these types of games and you are still showing that level of disconnectivity at this point of the season, that is a real problem.
Yeah, a lot of times it doesn't mesh. Everyone's agenda, they don't mesh together in this team. So people say, ah, man, there's no I in team. Don't believe that. You got 12, 15 guys on that roster. Every one of those guys got their own individual agenda. Last year, the team agenda was the most important thing. This year, since they've come out of training camp, the team agenda has not been the most important thing. You know, it's been individual things. So as a team, you do have individual things. Gordon Hayward's trying to save his career. He's trying to restore his confidence. Kyrie Irving, he was not in good shape when they started the season. This team went to the finals in the Eastern Conference last year without him. Jaylen Brown, man, what kind of year player am I going to be in year number two? Tatum, man, I've been training with Kobe. I'm ready to be a superstar. I need my own franchise. So I don't like the fact that starting to hear these little things come out of the locker room. And the most significant thing for me, and you have to be able to answer this, Chris, they don't look like they're having a good time. They look like they don't like each other. Now, I'm just going to tell you, you can get on TV and you can fake it, but, man, what we have, it's real. It would bleed through the TV over time. And I think through the season, we have seen this Celtics team, they don't have great chemistry, and they don't like playing with each other or being with each other.
Marcus Morris said as much a couple weeks back. He said, we're not having any fun. And this was on the heels of, you know, they just lost a couple of games.
Explain that to people. These young guys living out their dream, making all this money, because professional sports, I'm going to tell you, I will not have a better time in my life than I had playing ball. Traveling around the country, playing ball with a bunch of guys that demographic, that economic, I'm never going to have that circle ever again. How can they not be having a good time going around the NBA playing?
It's even harder to explain because despite the fact he said that after the two losses, they had been 10-1 in January, gone on a great run, had looked like a contender once again. But Marcus Morris didn't just say, we're not having fun after this loss. He said, we're not having fun for a long time. And I think that speaks to the disconnect that you're talking about within the locker room where guys maybe have different agendas there. You have the 20-somethings that are kind of on the rise trying to make their mark.
Guys to sacrifice who haven't gotten paid yet. That is always a problem. You bring in Al Horford and you say your statistical profile is going to be limited, but guess what? We're bringing you in with a max contract. Chris Bosh with the Heat. Listen, we're going to ask you to do very uncomfortable things with your max contract. Kevin Love with the Cavs with your max contract. Terry Rozier hasn't made any money. This is a kid from Youngstown, Ohio, as gritty as it gets. He's trying to get paid. There is no guarantee that Jaylen Brown is going to be an eight-figure-a-year player in this league. None. I understand he's a very good defender, but he has to, in year three, do more than he's done this year. Now, last year, when he's shooting 40% from three with that level of defense, okay, everyone needs that. But this year, now that his scoring's down a couple points, his shooting has gone back to where most people thought it would be, or 33% from three.
I didn't ever think he was going to be a three-point shooter.
Right. So how much is he worth? Now, Tatum has real confidence. I'm going to get paid either way. But even Tatum is playing nearly the exact same number of minutes as he had last year. Last year was 30. This year it's 31. Yet he is shooting three more times per game. That might not seem like a lot. He was taking 10 shots a game last year. It's 30% more in the same minutes, which means he's not taking as quality of shots. And I brought up high school basketball earlier. It's an element of, I don't know when I'm going to get my chance, so I'm taking it now. I don't blame guys who are, you know who has played really well this year? Marcus Smart. And you know what? He got paid this offseason. Like, Marcus Smart has the security of, I got my contract. It is hard. Pro sports, yes, it's about team and it's about the winning. It's a business. And if the way this show worked was, is salaries were determined by things like how long people spoke or whatever it was, but right.
I'm sure.
But, and guess what, Jenna? What? Even if you didn't have something great to say, you'd be like, well, let me tell you this.
Because
But it would only be fair. Like, true. And so the Celtics, who are they really? Kyrie's excellent. Gordon Hayward was playing well before the All-Star game. And then he missed the first game back, and against the Bulls was a disaster. Brown is now a mediocre to poor three-point shooter. Jason Tatum, he's gone from 43% elite three-point shooter to 38%, and we know his efficiency's gone down. So who are they actually, not just who we thought they would be?
If this was the Lakers, we would say it's up to LeBron to take this team, get them together, and say, the time is now, we all have to come together. But I don't feel like that falls on Kyrie Irving's shoulders. Is that more of a Brad Stevens thing? Because no one's getting paid right this second, so something has to change if this team is going to make it.
Yeah, look, and I heard you guys talk about it earlier. We give Brad Stevens all the credit in the world when he was succeeding the last few years. You've got to come down on him. And look, he's been hard on himself after some of these games as well. He has to take some responsibility here for not finding the rotations that work and not getting everybody on the same page. Marcus Smart said something in the locker room after the game last night. He said, it's like we don't have the will anymore. Like, you don't have the will anymore. Like, you're 20 games left in the season, and you don't have the will anymore. That's troubling going into the playoffs.
All right, Maddox, stick around. Take a break. Coming up, how much is LeBron to blame for the Lakers being outside the playoff picture? That's next on First Things First. FS1 is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the biggest personalities on the biggest stories. We get you started. I get you started. Right here on First Things First. Catch it on Monday through Friday only
Jenna,
on
got
FS1.
News for you.
Tell me.
That's where you work.
FS1.
Yeah.
Jenna just gets a little confused about where we are in the show every day around the same time of the show.
Really?
Yeah, it's a little Groundhog Day-ish, but that's fine. Don't worry.
Ned Ryerson? Back here talking LeBron with Chris Mannix. There is no squirrel. I learned that the hard way.
Jenna,
so the Lakers lost to the Pelicans over the weekend. A Pelicans team playing without Anthony Davis. The loss dropped the Lakers a game below 500. They're now three games out of the playoff picture. It's not a great spot to be in with only 23 games left to play. And as a result, LeBron had some harsh words for his teammates after the game.
You've never been there or know what it takes to actually, you know, shoot for something like that. Sometimes you're afraid to get uncomfortable. You know, so you got to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. So I'm not saying that's what we are as a whole. Kind of looks that way at times that, you know, sometimes we feel like we're afraid to be uncomfortable, kind of get out of our comfort zone, you know, kind of, you know, have that sense of urgency, you know, from the jump, not be afraid to actually go out and fail to succeed. So. I mean, we have, what, 23 games left. It's just been so, like, in the last few years, you know, everybody's so accustomed to the losses that I'm just not accustomed to. I'm not accustomed to it. I would never get comfortable with losing. So, you know, losing game one to Houston, it feels the same way as losing game 59 in New Orleans for me. That's just how I'm built. That's who I am.
Maddox, what do you think about what LeBron had to say?
Well, of course they're accustomed to losing. That's all they've, for the most part, ever done with that group. And, of course, there's no sense of urgency because outside of LeBron, who in that group has ever played with a sense of urgency? Rondo? He might be the only guy in that mix that understands what it means to be in this type of playoff race. But if you look at the kind of big picture of the Lakers, none of this should really be all that surprising. Yes, the injury coming into the season was a major factor. With the way that changed the season altogether with LeBron going out for that full month and the Lonzo Ball injury as well. But two reasons I said at the start of the year that this team wouldn't make the playoffs, they still apply. They brought in the wrong pieces around LeBron James. The Miami Heat set the blueprint for how to build a team around LeBron, and the Cleveland Cavaliers took it to another level. Shooting, shooting, shooting. And what did we hear from Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka at the start of the season? We're reinventing how to play around LeBron James.
Yep.
We're going to put ball handlers out there, playmakers out there. Did anybody believe that at the time?
We're going to be a great defensive team.
I didn't believe any of that at the time. That made no sense to me at the time. The second part of it was, and this got ratcheted to another level because of the Anthony Davis stuff, there are not enough guys in that locker room that have real equity in that team. And Chris, maybe you can speak to this more than I can, but you know, LeBron knows he's a Laker for the next 3-4 years or whatever. How many other guys in that locker room can say that? And I think that matters. I think when you have to dig deep in moments like this, how many of those guys think, oh, I'm not going to be here that much longer anyway. I'm playing for myself anyway. You got half the team is on one-year contracts. They're basically mercenaries out there. I think that's a major factor in this team kind of crumbling over these last couple of weeks.
I think you can't have mercenaries in the West with LeBron, with Golden State, because all these players know Golden State's out there. You can have that in Miami when he was there. Guys would come there and be like, okay, I'll come do this. He had that in Cleveland. So you make a great point. It's hard to duplicate that. But the Lakers are going through something that the Celtics are going through. You mentioned the guys with the one-year contracts, the buy-in and everything, and they're not being chemistry. The Celtics, they had some success with their younger players. These younger players haven't had any team success. They've only had a little bit of individual success. So LeBron, who is he talking to? Because a lot of times when you're a coach or you're the star of the team, you send out messages that the other guys can hear. And to me, what LeBron's saying, it's true, but why did you say it? Especially with the inexperience. These guys don't have anything to identify with. So LeBron, he's putting all the pressure on them because he said, I know how to do this. And we will count Rondo in that group of understanding urgency. So does LeBron, in his comments, does he put more pressure on these young players? Pressure? No, they're not used to seeing. And they have gone through a two-thirds of the regular season that did not help their confidence when everything was, man, I'm getting shipped out of here. I'm out of here for Anthony Davis. So, man, how do they turn this book and say, okay, I'm going to be here the rest of the year and be able to thrive in this environment? That's what the Lakers have to figure out.
So, obviously, the Lakers are not in this position if LeBron doesn't get hurt. If LeBron doesn't get hurt, they're not out of the playoffs. Now, maybe I know they were in the fourth spot when he got hurt, but they were only two spots up of the eight spot. So it's not like they were solidly in the fourth spot, but they would have, instead of going 6-12 in those 18 games, even if they just go 9-9, they're right there tied for the seven seed as we sit here today. But the injury happened, and LeBron James, like now, every player ever has now dealt with an injury at some point in his career. He was the one guy standing alone who hadn't. So now that's the reality. So there are three major issues, and you guys touch on all of them. First one is roster construction. The idea behind this roster was LeBron James is an offense unto himself come the playoffs. Our offense will be good no matter what because we have LeBron. So let's make sure we have a really good defense to go along with it. Except the guys they brought in to be good defenders aren't good defenders. It's not only that they're not good shooters, they're also not good defenders. JaVale McGee can block shots, but he is it's so odd because he's such a high IQ human being, but he's a very low IQ basketball player. And so I'm not doubting his intelligence the way Shaq does. He's actually a sharp guy, but on the court he plays like a dope sometimes. We know that Lance is a pest. Being a pest doesn't make you a great defensive player. The four guys they brought in this offseason are their four lowest net rating guys on the team. So that's roster building. Then there's the coaching element, which is he doesn't have a Spoelstra or even a Ty Lue to lean on, and Luke Walton is guessing. People weren't paying attention against the Pelicans. I give the Twitter account Lakers Film Room credit for pointing this out. Rondo played 17 consecutive minutes. 17 minutes without a rest. That's a high school coaching error. That's an error. It's like, oh, my God, I forgot your spot in the rotation to his backup. Like, you can't make that mistake. And then the last one is, because LeBron is, in my eyes, 20 pounds heavier than he was when the season started, and he's clearly not fully healthy, and for the first time in his career, because he dealt with the injury, he doesn't have the stamina he has had in the past. He cannot play both ways. People can say he wasn't a plus defender the last few years, but he wasn't a negative defender until right now. So if he's going to, in their losses to the Hawks and Nets, I'll do the math quick, he's averaging 28-9-14. He's doing enough for you offensively. He's got to get the other guys to carry the team defensively. Instead, against the Hawks, you allow 11 first quarter threes. Against the Pelicans, you allow 42 first quarter points. You lose. If you come out against those teams playing that poorly to begin with, you lose. And if not for an 18-point comeback against Boston and a 19-point comeback against Houston, it'd be seven losses in a row, and the season would be over as we sit here today.
LeBron is part of the problem defensively, though. You have to acknowledge that.
Might be the biggest part of the problem defensively. Right. He is carrying them offensively. So if the guys would buy in, they could pick up for him defensively on the other end is my point.
I'm with you there. The Luke Walton point, though, you know, you mentioned Eric Spoelstra. I don't think Luke Walton's on the same level as Eric Spoelstra.
No.
Most people, but even like, what did we know about Eric Spoelstra back in 2011?
Not much.
We didn't know that much. There were a lot of people high on him, and they knew he was Pat Riley's heir. We didn't know that he would become one of the top tier coaches in the NBA.
We knew, in case emergency, break glass, Pat Riley can come downstairs.
Well, we did, but he was never going to do that. And this is my point with the Lakers. We don't know what Luke Walton is. I think he's a pretty good coach with the potential to be a really good coach. He does make some gaffes out there, and he's still learning on the job. He got this job probably a little bit too early because of what happened in Golden State. But, in Miami, look, they can parse words all they want. LeBron wanted to get Eric Spoelstra fired. He wanted a new coach down there within that first year. But Eric Spoelstra knew from day one that he had the full backing of Pat Riley and Mickey Arison, and those guys
Dwayne Wade.
Those guys were not going to be pressured to replace him at any point in time. I don't even know if he had Dwayne Wade. There was some stuff with Dwayne Wade that first year. I remember when Dwayne said, like, he's not my guy about Eric Spoelstra, but it was mostly the Riley and Mickey Arison stuff. In no way, shape, or form can we believe, outside of Jeannie Buss, who does respect Luke Walton, but Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka, do you get any sense that these guys have his back in the fullest possible way?
No.
And if they don't, isn't that a factor in all this? Like, if you don't know that your bosses have your back all the way, I think that's a problem.
Here's the thing, and this is where I disagree with that part of it, and I disagree with the idea that it is LeBron's job to motivate, not that you guys are saying this, the young players, or that even the Anthony Davis one-year contract stuff should be a huge factor of it. It's your job, Luke Walton, to do the best at your job, no matter who you're backing, who has your back. Young players, listen, it is your chance to prove who you are in the NBA. It is your chance to either get paid if you're on a one-year contract for the next year, to prove the tier of player you are. It is your job to be ready to play a couple days after the All-Star break. You just had a week off from work. This is, even if they haven't been tested in the fire of the postseason, they understand, they can read a standing sheet. They know we got a quarter of the season left. We're not currently in the playoffs. Let's have some attention to detail in a first quarter against a Pelicans team that's without their best player. That stuff's, to me, that's inexcusable, no matter the uncertainty surrounding your future with the team.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.